Welcome back, everybody. On our way to talk to two of our candidates here, David Craig and Jeannie Hadaway-Riccio. Got that right. I want to remind you, this Saturday, June 7th at 5 p.m., I'm moderating the last Everyman Theater World of the Play panel for this season. For the current performance, Tribes, I'll be talking with Will Conley, a deaf playwright, actor, and former chairperson of the Theater Arts Department at Gallaudet College, Tim McCarty, artistic director of Quest Visual Theater, and Kara Miller, who is the LGBTQA Resource Center coordinator for Gallaudet, about finding a voice. And you don't want to miss this conversation. It's incredible. This play is incredible, as it explores the world of deaf and hearing people and the divide between and what these tribes in our lives mean and the separations between the two. So you can go to everymantheater.org for information. Please join us here. It's going to be great. 5 o'clock this Saturday, and we'll be taping it for a broadcast in the following week here on the Mark Steiner Show. We are joined here right now by Harford County Executive David Craig. In his second term as Harford County Executive, before that he was Mayor of Havre de Grace and elected to the Maryland State House of Delegates and State Senate, and a Republican candidate for governor now. Good to see you again,
David. Good morning. Good to be here.
Delegate Jeannie Hadaway-Riccio is with us. She is Republican State Delegate from District 37B from the Eastern Shore, Caroline, Dorchester, Talbot, and Wicomico counties, and is running as Lieutenant Governor candidate with David Craig. Good to have you in the studio.
Thanks for having me.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook pages. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner. But join us, 410-319-8888. So, David, let me just ask this question. Did you think that the Republican primary was going to be so hotly as contested as it is?
Yes.
You did, really?
Yes. So if you go back to the beginning of 2013, people would say, who do you think is going to run? And I would go through the list, and I would say there's going to be at least four of us. And I ended up pretty much right. The only one I really didn't know, I knew there was going to be someone who I didn't know.
Who is
and that was Ron George. I mean, I knew there was going to be somebody getting in the race who I hadn't thought of, but we were pretty confident that everybody was going to get in.
Well, I'm going to ask you both this question. Also, do you think, given all your years in the Republican Party, the work you're doing, Harford County Executive, successful at that, many people would say.
Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome. I don't mean it gratuitously. I mean, people would say you've done a good job at Harford County Executive, that the race would be this tight. It would be so difficult to get through it all. And they would be this close.
Well, I do this little thing before our elections, even before I get in. I write down what I think the statistics are going to be. And after it's all over, I'll show you how close we were. But, yes, we were pretty confident that it was going to be a very close race. The fact that the date had been moved to June really took a lot of people out of even thinking about when. I mean, everybody right now is still thinking about their child getting out of college, school being done, those types of things.
It's not a very good idea
and
to have a June
primary. So it wasn't really the best idea to move it. I talk to people, and Jeannie talks to people all over the state, oh, we're going to vote for you in September.
Right.
Well, that's two months late. We need your vote in June. So that was not a good move for the people. But I would still say probably a large number, probably over 50% of the people have not made their mind up yet who they're going to vote for on either side.
I mean, either side is true. And so Jeannie Hadaway-Riccio, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So tell me why you decided to leave the House of Delegates to do this.
Well, I've been in the House of Delegates for 11 years now, representing the Eastern Shore, a very rural area of Maryland, of course. And after 11 years, it just has become clear to me that no matter how much we fight for the taxpayer, no matter how much we fight for the citizens of Maryland, until we have a change at the top on the second floor, our state is going to remain the same. So I knew that we needed some new leadership, and I thought David Craig was the best choice for candidate, and that was the basis of my decision.
So talk a bit about what separates you from the other candidates. I mean, when I look at the last debate and interviewing some of the other candidates, all of you are calling for major tax cuts and kind of reform of government. And I mean, what separates the candidates?
The biggest change is if you hear everybody start talking about their experience in small business.
Right.
And, you know, I worked in a factory. Jeannie has a small business of her own, but we have the experience to actually do it. And when you know, thank you for saying about county executive, but governor's not an entry-level position. You actually need someone who knows how to do it, and you have to have had the experience. And having been a mayor and a county executive for
and
almost
a high school
19
principal,
years.
Right?
Assistant principal.
Assistant principal.
That gets you – and actually a coach. Those things do get you ready for a lot of things. But it is one thing to bring the problem to the desk. It's another to be the person at the desk who has to get the problem resolved. And I know, having been a mayor of a small town of about 15,000 people and then becoming county executive, a larger population, but many of the problems are still the same.
So what is it, though? I mean, what is it that I'm still trying to figure out, what is it that, other than your being, I guess, one of the few people in the race on the Republican side that has executive experience running a government, what is it that separates you? I mean, other people can say, yeah, that's fine, but look, we bring all these other things to the table. We know how the system works. We've been in it for a long time, and we're all saying the same thing. And can we,
They really don't.
So I'm trying to see what divides me. What sets you, from your perspectives, collectively, what sets you off from the other candidates?
I don't think there's really a lot of dispute on probably 80 to 90% of what we think's wrong with the state. It's just how that you need someone to get it done. And I do tell people, when Buck Showalter sends somebody out to the mound, he doesn't send someone who was sitting in the stands or playing left field. He sends someone who was a pitcher. That's a key. The other thing is, Jeannie and I are both very proud on our elections. We're 14-0 when it comes to general elections. So we do know how to reach out to independents and Democrats and conservatives and liberals on all sides and say, look, we probably agree on the problem that exists. Maybe the only way we disagree is what the solution is to that problem. And we want clean environments. We want safe places. We want good schools for our children to go to. We want lower taxes. We want more jobs. So we agree on a lot of the things. It's just, do you have the experience to get it done?
Well, one thing I would add to that, too, is that while all of the candidates are talking about what needs to be fixed, we are the only candidates that have actually offered a plan on how to correct the spending, how to correct health care, how to make a difference with taxes and regulations. And that does come partly from our executive experience and our legislative experience. But we've actually sat down and done the research and plotted out a plan and offered that to the taxpayers.
So what is that plan? What is the plan in taxes? You decide, no mistaking, that both of you probably have the position that taxes are too high.
Yes, they are.
Why am I not shocked that you're going to say that? But tell us why you think that and what the solution is from your perspective.
We can just take it back to Harford County this past year. The size of our budget went from $814 million to $734 million. We spend less. So sometimes when people in the media or the forum say, well, how, if you lower or eliminate our income tax, how are you going to have the money to pay for what we need? There's so much duplication in government that we can reduce and get rid of and still not eliminate any service. Most of it is internal. And I have that experience, having been the county executive, and see where money was being spent and wasted and were not spent well. And at the state level, when you go from a $800 million budget to a $40 billion budget, it's going to be very easy. The initial thing is to have individual department heads that work on the issue. We have the little thing where we have a little can with 3 pennies in it, because basically what we're saying is 3 cents less per dollar is what we're going to spend, and that saves us $1 billion.
So what would you cut? What gets cut? Like, what did you cut in Harford County? What would you see cut in state government? What would you cut?
Okay. Well, sometimes there are positions you don't need anymore, but it wasn't eliminating the person. It was three of us are sitting here, and one of us retires or leaves, and then the two of us take that job over. So that reduces expenses like that. I can tell you that I learned this from a man who owned a little department store in Havre de Grace. He said, if you take care of the pennies, the dollars take care of themselves. We had a situation where a lot of the higher paid people had automobiles to take home and drive back and forth. Well, somebody making over $100,000, why did they need an automobile as a little gift, as opposed to somebody who's making only $35,000 and it's a lot harder? So we eliminated all those vehicles, and that saved us hundreds of thousands of dollars on insurance, buying vehicles, gasoline, and those types of things. That's just one small thing, and that was in every department. Nobody will ever realize. So we only now have 6 vehicles that people drive back and forth to work, and those are the 24-hour-a-day people who might get called at 11 o'clock at night and have to show up. We had a situation internally with computers, where each department would be buying their hardware and software individually, And then we now have a department that looks at that and go, no, this department already has that. You don't need to buy anything new. Or here's a new software that's much more efficient. So there are a lot of it's just internal in the government to make sure that you don't have two different people doing the same thing but in a different way with different money.
Jeannie, how would you respond?
Well, I agree with everything that David has said. I mean, we have an audit department at the state level. They audit our agencies routinely, and they find errors and problems with the way state money is spent all the time. The issue is that no one takes action, and there's no accountability to correct those issues. So one of the other things that we can do is look at those audits and make the agencies take corrective actions. And that does allow us to return money to the taxpayer. That's what I actually love about the income tax relief coming first, is the fact that that will help every citizen in the state of Maryland. It also will help the majority of our small businesses, because most small businesses pay on their personal income tax, not on the corporate tax. So this is a way that we can give relief to every single citizen in the state.
Do you think that we need, you're saying you think citizens spend too much money on taxes, A, and B, you're saying with small businesses, is it a matter of spending too much, or we need to do a different kind of tax structure so it's not based on personal income tax?
The income, the states.
Maybe we say that's the bottom line. The problem is that
the states that do not have the personal income tax, there are only nine, and they're not red, they're not blue. It's Texas, it's Tennessee, but it's also Washington State and Delaware. They have the best economy of any states in the country right now, because that's where businesses are moving and situations like that. So eliminating that income tax and going back in that direction, a lot of people haven't gotten a pay raise for a long time. If we phase in our first aspect of it, the average family will have $1,500 more that they now have in their pocket, and they get to spend it. And then that builds your economy, so it does make it much better. When Jeannie mentioned the audits, the information I think we have is that the state audits have shown there's about $2 billion of money that was spent inappropriately. So if you correct that right off the bat, that saves a tremendous amount of over almost 3.5% to 4% of the state budget immediately.
Some people are arguing, we did this on the show the other day with another one of the candidates, that the states with no income tax, or like Texas and Tennessee and others, also have some of the lowest performing schools in the country. They also have issues with their roads. They also have some of them may have more jobs, higher unemployment in some of those states, and the jobs pay lower wages. I mean,
when people do talk, try to compare the salaries of people, cost of living. That was one of the issues about the minimum wage. The counties on the Eastern Shore, the cost of living there is a lot less. Living here in Baltimore, yes, a lot more. In Montgomery County, a lot more. There are people who may say, well, I could move to this county and I'll be making more money, but you're going to be spending more money just for the cost of living. I knew as mayor of Havre de Grace one time, we had a developer came in and was building houses. He said, I can sell a house here for this amount of money, and it's almost 30% less than the house I'm going to sell in another part of the county. So, just comparing that statistic really doesn't work. But I do understand that some of the other states don't do well. It's not just based on whether they have income tax or not. They're just not doing a good job on maintaining their infrastructure. And we've done a good job of that in Harford County.
So I want to talk about some of the issues I know that you all have talked about here. And one is the stormwater tax that people, some of you oppose. Some people oppose in the state. I know you two oppose. Let's talk a bit about that and why. I mean, why that tax is being opposed by...
I always start by saying thank God we didn't have a snow tax this past winter, because we would have paid a lot more. Here's the situation. One, as mayor and county executive, I've never been in favor of unfunded mandates coming from the state government, no matter whether it was on the rain tax or what it might be, saying, all right, you now have to do this and pay this. In Harford County, we already had certain types of taxes that were the impact fee, the recordation tax, and the transfer tax. And that's when you buy a house or build a house. And that, by state law, was said that it could only go into certain things, school construction and a couple other things. If we had the ability, and we don't need any school construction based on the impact fee anymore, because that's all about the number of students you have. So we don't need that for a while. If they had said, all right, we'll allow you to take up to 25% of this money and dedicate it to your stormwater management, we could have done that, and we would have had enough money already in our pocket to be able to take care of the projects that they wanted us to do. And every county is slightly different. Some counties have different sources of funding, and they would have been able to have done that. And I think it would have been much better if they had looked at they should have started it as a pilot program and said, what's the best way to do this?
But I mean, Gina, I know you opposed this in the state legislature.
Yes, I did.
I know you did. So let me talk.
And still do.
I'm sure you do. Why would you change your mind? So the question I have, though, is, I mean, the people who support this tax are saying, look, that it's a serious issue. We have runoff from our highways. We have runoff from our driveways. They have runoff off of people's roofs, off of businesses' roofs. They're going into the stormwater. They're polluting the bay and our waters. That's real. Mm-hmm. That's not myth.
Right. And I agree with you, and I do think that we need to do something about it, but that's exactly why we set up the Chesapeake Bay Restoration Fund. In addition to upgrading our wastewater treatment plants in the state, that money could have been used for stormwater separation projects tied to those wastewater treatment plants. The problem is that the governor raided the fund and spent the money on other things, so now all of those projects are being debted, and we're way behind. So this is just another tax. Additionally, to go back to your comment earlier about the low-wage jobs, we agree that we want people to be high-income earners. We want them to have careers, not just jobs. But in order to do that, you have to have a productive economy, and you have to have businesses experiencing success. And adding taxes like this that put our businesses at a competitive disadvantage to every other state in the country, because we're the only state that has this tax, does not help us create jobs and help the people in our state.
And there are also some, I'll just jump in real quick, there's some rules and regulations that have forced people to build impervious surfaces. You know, for example, on farms, if you have animals, you had to build a concrete pad for the manure. And now we're saying, all right, well, now because you built this concrete pad, we're going to tax you on that. So on one hand, they were trying to say this was what's going to help the manure not get into the there, and now they're saying we're going to tax you for that. Or let's say you build a shopping center and we say you have to have a certain number of parking spaces on there. And I'm sure we all pretty much drive by a shopping center and see that most of those parking spaces are empty. Why did we make them build an impervious surface and now we're going to tax them for it? So we should have, again, a pilot program. And the other thing was, it would have been better if we had done it by the watershed tributaries and said, because each one's slightly different. I can tell you, in Harry Grace one time, we were building a new athletic field and they were amazed that they found all this pollution underneath it. And I said, well, I remember as a kid that was a coal plant. So all the coal got buried there. So there's a lot of it's things that happened decades ago, and we just don't know what was there.
So let me ask you a political question. You're going to come back to these kind of other questions that we're facing, and I talked a bit about Baltimore, and we have a lot of listeners in Harford County, by the way, and a lot of listeners in Montgomery County, Prince George's County. So join us here at 410-319-8888, your county executive here, and people bleeding off the Eastern Shore, you can join us as well. 410-319-8888. Not just bleeding on the Eastern Shore, I mean listening. That's our signals on the Eastern Shore. 410-319-8888. It was reported in today's paper that your campaign didn't make enough money to get the matching funds from the state. It's interesting that the Republicans are going after public funding, which I think is very good. But the question, but you didn't make it. So what does that say about the campaign and the struggles you're having?
Our campaign was completely – we were handled a little bit differently than the other campaigns in that because Jeannie was in the House of Delegates and I was an elected official. So for the first 7 weeks, we were not allowed to raise money at all.
You couldn't do it either?
No. Initially they said, yes, you could. And then 2 weeks later they came. And so we planned all these fundraisers in January and February. And then they came back and said, no, you can't.
I knew Jeannie could. I didn't know you
could. Yes. But they changed it. So we canceled all those fundraisers. If we had been allowed to have done that for the 7 weeks, we would have had the money a long time ago. So we had to move everything back. And that's the only thing that kept us from doing it. Because just last week we raised $68,000. And if we had been allowed to do this in January and February, we'd have been over that goal. Now, we still are permitted to have public financing in the general election. The one had nothing to do with the other. So
you're still allowed
to do that. And the reality is we were very close on either side. And we were also restricted that we were only allowed to collect $250 from someone, not more than that. And my opponents were allowed to take as much as up to the $4,000.
Why is,
Again, they said it was because we were both elected officials. So there was a lot of restrictions put on us. We worked our way through it. We set our goal. But if it had been different for those 7 weeks, we'd have been way over.
And you called for an investigation of one of the other candidates in the race, Mr. Hogan. Why?
When I started, I've always had the proper organization where people made donations and they were political. And then he was allowed to start one that was not political, raise money. I contributed to it. Jeannie contributed to it. People were contributed to it knowing that it was about Change Maryland, but not necessarily about running for governor. And then all of a sudden, it was allowed to be shifted over. So that is going to change the state law significantly. I mean, what's to say that David Craig wouldn't have started a Preserve Maryland group, let people raise money? There was no record of how much money you would have contributed. I could have asked you for $25,000, $100,000.
It's a very different kind of constitutional organization.
Yeah,
right,
so
right.
It was that was never been permitted before.
So you've contributed to your opponent's campaign.
Yes.
I know. I want my money back.
Yeah. So if they look at that and go, wait a minute, this is not – our concern was that we knew that at least five people had filed some, you know, protests about it, and they said, well, we're not going to give you the evaluation until after the primary. Like, oh, that's not good.
Well, I think there are some transparency issues here, too, that we want to bring to light, because all of the other candidates had declared their intent to run for the office they're seeking. We all had to file campaign finance reports and disclose all of our donors the amount that they contributed. And I think that's a good thing. We need to have fully transparent campaign finance laws and rules in Maryland. But because he raised this money through an LLC and not through a campaign committee, he did not have to file any campaign finance reports, and he didn't have to disclose any of that information. So, you know, we're coming at it as candidates of transparency and fiscal responsibility, and so we're running our campaign in the same way.
Let me get a phone call here, 410-319-8888. Amy in Hamden, you're on the air. Amy, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a few young kids in elementary school that are like my nieces and nephews and two of my own kids. How will Common Core affect them if it's not repealed, and what is the best way to get it repealed?
Well, as my career is as a teacher and assistant principal for 34 years, and I can tell you that we're very proud that our grandchildren are going to the same school that my wife and I went to a long time ago, and we do want good schools. I see that teachers are very frustrated by the amount of time they have to spend on Common Core and getting it ready. It's not the teachers. They're not being allowed to concentrate on the students that they have. The testing that is taking place, the average student is seeing about 20 days of their education either disappearing because they're either being prepared for the test or taking the test. That's one-ninth of the school year. So I believe that we should just go back and say, no, we're going to repeal Common Core. We're going to let education continue where it's supposed to be, which is in the classroom with the teacher and the children, their parents involved, and it should be the local school board and the local superintendent. It shouldn't be politicians deciding how teachers are evaluated, what student achievement is, and how curriculum has been done. Strange thing, though, is I've done all that as an educator. I mean, I did evaluate students. I did evaluate teachers. I did write curriculum. But when I'm the governor, that's not what I should be doing. That's what teachers should be doing.
So I'm curious, when you talk about education, the other issues we face, one of the issues in this campaign has to do with health care and has to do with the governor's handling of the health care when he was there. There's a lot of questions. You said earlier, Jeannie, as we opened up, that you will have platforms that deal with that. Mm-hmm. So what's your perspective?
Well, I think that we all agree that we needed health care reform. It's just how you implement it and how you make sure that everyone has access to quality, affordable health care. Unfortunately, the system in Maryland completely failed, and we still have people that cannot get insurance, and that's just not acceptable. Our plan is, and what we have been suggesting all along, is that you don't actually need to have this whole internet-based exchange and make people go through navigators and all of these bureaucratic nightmare options to get your insurance. If people qualify for a subsidy, give them the subsidy and let them go to a private insurance broker and get their insurance. That is the simplest solution. It's the most direct solution, and you could make that change today.
We have a few minutes left here. Let's get 410-319-8888, Dave on the phone. Dave, you're online, on the air.
Dave and Dave.
Dave, you're there.
I'd like to know what your stance is on the carry concealed permits.
We are very much – actually, we just got the A rating at NRA because we staunchly feel that the Second Amendment is important, that people should have the right to conceal carry, and that we should also be a shall issue state, not just a may issue state. States with those rules usually are a little bit safer. Jeannie may want to talk about her experience being in the legislature on voting on those bills.
Sure. We've been both strong fighters for the Second Amendment over the years. I've been in the House of Delegates for the last 11 years and watching our liberties and our rights be eroded every day. And I feel like we're constantly, as business owners, taxpayers, all of the above, we're constantly on the defense. When David and I become governor and lieutenant governor, that will change. And, we'll have an offensive approach to protecting our liberties and our rights in Maryland.
So tell me where people can get in touch with your campaign.
All right. It's davidcraig.com, www.davidcraig.com. And you'll see a little bio on Jeannie, a little bio on me. You'll also see a picture of me and Helen Bentley. And Helen Bentley, Ellen Salaberry, who both have endorsed us and supported us. Very proud of they were both mentors for me in the past and worked with them extensively. So we're very happy that they both came out. But it's davidcraig.com.
So, David Craig, good to have you in the studio again. Always great to see you. And Jeannie Hathaway Ruscio, good to see you as well. Good to have you in the studio. Good luck on the campaign trail.
Thank you. It's always good to be here at Morgan where I got my master's degree.
That's right. You did get your master's degree here. Yes. I forgot about that. That's right. That's right. That's right.
Thank you.
Thank you both so much
for
being
Mark.
Here. Good luck on the campaign trail. On the way out of here, I want to thank you all for listening to us and being part of our program today and joining us here on the airwaves, and reminding you that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Credit union, remind me, it's a credit union, not just a bank. Money comes back to you in the end, and it belongs to you. For information, go to www.mecu.com, or you can log on to thesteinershow.org and click on their banner. It's on our page. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Cynthia Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineers, Andre Milton. Our interns are Alex Boston, Matt Malice, Taylor Littlejohn, and Ajani. To hear the show again and podcast any of our past shows, you can go to the web at steinershow.org. All the information, like how to click on to David Craig's campaign page, will be on our webpage. You can also listen to and download all of our podcasts on iTunes. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, what are you listening to? We're going out with Last Goodbye by Jeff Buckley. On this day in 1997, Jeff Buckley's body was found floating in the Mississippi River. Great artist, playing song in his memory. So for Public Radio to be EAA 88.9 FM, I'm Mark Steiner. Vote. Take care. It's over.